You're listening to the Isoca Podcast. I'm your host, Abby Norton, and today I'm speaking with security experts Frank Downs and Dustin Brewer. In this episode of the podcast, we're going to be talking about cryptocurrency. To get us started, can you tell us why we're talking about cryptocurrency today?
So something that Dustin and I have been interested in for nearly a decade now has been the rise and fall and rise and fall and use and lack of use and then the obtuse of cryptocurrency, basically. We were talking about it the other day because what we think we're seeing right now is another surge, which clearly when Bitcoin's gone up to $50,000 from just over under $4,000 in a year, I'd say that's a surge. And we were talking about the different things that make it unique compared to other technologies and the actual implications of using it and mining it. Dustin, being Isoca's futurist, brought up a couple very good points and why it might be something that people are both excited to use and a little hesitant to use. What do you think, Dustin?
First, let's caveat this whole thing. We are not financial advisors.
No.
We are not telling anybody that cryptocurrency is the answer or that it is like what you need to put all your money by any stretch of the imagination. What we'd really like to focus on, though, I think, is the aspect of cryptocurrency and how it kind of it brought to the mainstream blockchain technology. Blockchain technology has been around for a very long time. You could argue that it's been around since the 90s, and you could argue that even some form of cryptocurrency in the form of DigiCash has been around for a long time. Actually, Microsoft passed up on the idea of actually buying the first cryptocurrency back in the 90s as well. You know, blockchain sets out to settle a couple of different scores here. One of them on the cybersecurity realm is the integrity side of the CIA triangle, right? So all of the things that we're doing are going to have all the data that we're putting into this. Some people call it a glorified database. So we'll just say it's a database of some kind. All of it is going to have integrity, which means that nobody can mess with it. Nobody can change it. Non-repudiation is in there, is built in. There's a lot of things there. On the audit side of the house, it's self-auditing, right? It is a system that is self-auditing. It is self-integrity keeping. There's probably a word for that. And I probably should know what it is, but I don't. So it's got all these great aspects to it. Now, enter cryptocurrency. The real reason, and this is definitely arguable, and I'm sure we'll have someone, you know, send us angry emails here, but arguably it's why blockchain is so popular and why it's being implemented in other areas other than just fintech, right? It's being implemented into supply chain. Walmart's doing a pilot of it. It's being implemented in healthcare. You know, we already did our blockchain podcast, so I guess I'm being a little redundant here, but just to kind of set the stage here for what we really want to talk about. When we say cryptocurrency, we're not going to give anybody the golden bullet on what you need to do in order to be a millionaire by 2025, right? But we really do want to kind of break it down and get into it. First of all, how, why, and you know where we kind of see it going next. Frank and I have both seen some pretty amazing things, pretty unbelievable things happen with the crypto market, especially during this last rise. Usually cryptocurrency has a Thanksgiving rise, you know, and by usually, of course, I mean since 2009, so it hasn't been that long, but there's a bit of a bump during, you know, the American Thanksgiving season. It goes back down. And then it kind of just trades flat until the next, until something happens, right? This time around, it's been a little different. We've had politicians, we've had regulators come out and basically say things such as cryptocurrency is only being utilized for nefarious purposes. I think you would have many people disagree with that. I don't quite know why they said that, but almost in step with that, then we had a couple of industries that actually started picking it up and saying, well, we're going to start accepting Bitcoin for payment, true payment, right? And these are big companies. These are big companies like Tesla, right? There is a rumor out there that Apple will be next. We don't know that for sure. But so we see this not only adoption happening now on a private massive scale, but now on this publicly traded company massive scale too. It's a really interesting turn of events as far as culture goes as well, because now people are now willing to say that bits and bytes on a computer are worth just as much, if not more, than fiat currency. And it's a very interesting time for us cybersecurity professionals, for us IT auditors and people in the IT profession. It's only going to get more interesting. Frank, anything to add to that?
I really am intrigued by the fact that some companies are really starting to take it as an exchange for payment. And I say exchange for payment because here, at least in the United States, it's not recognized as currency. It's recognized, though, still as an asset, but more in line with a capital gains investment asset. So it's viewed more as a speculative, definitely as a speculative noun, asset, however we want to put that, compared to an actual currency that you can use and spend in exchange for services and goods. I think that you can view it in a couple different ways, as that's a bad thing or that's a good thing. I mean, if you want to use it every day, it's going to be rough here in the States because capital gains tax is a lot worse than just sales tax. It's a lot higher. But also with connected more closely with the non-fungible tokens, the NFTs, where you're creating things that can be easily replicated and you're using cryptocurrency and the blockchain. You buy it with cryptocurrency, but it also has the blockchain applied to it to give it an authenticated, integral element, meaning that this is the original one of one or two of three or something along those lines. It's really unique as you're seeing this adoption in non-traditional ways. And as it grows, not just the things that are purchased, but the problems that are solved with it. I mean, in a world where we can make exact replicas of almost anything, right? Even with CRISPR people, right? You can even make replicas of people. I'm not saying you should, right?
Not quite.
Or duplicates of people with twins or things like that. And it's not Gattaca times yet, right?
Not yet.
But how do you say this is an original? This is first of first. And how do you exchange, how do you get the value out of that? I think that cryptocurrency and its affiliated tech are really kind of trying to address that issue. But it has a lot of dangers that come along with it too, based upon things that currently exist as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have, like you said, Frank, you know, the NFT thing is really interesting. We also see this kind of adoption kind of happening within the actual art industry itself and within fashion industry. So Nike started doing a thing where they had some kind of a crypto token that was attached to a pair of sneakers. You see this adoption happening again, not just on this user scale, but also on this industry scale. You know, one of the things that I've been trying to find out for a long time is what kind of constitutes an emerging technology? What makes an emerging technology so? It's a really difficult question to answer because it is so subjective. Now, one of the things to me, I think, and people do not agree with me on this, by the way, there's a state of emerging technology that Isoca is working on, that I am working on within Isoca, that's coming out, that we sent out a survey to kind of get people's, you know, opinions on emerging technologies. And one of the questions I asked was, you know, what constitutes an emerging technology to you? Societal adoption rate is a big thing for me. I feel like if everybody's using it, it's probably not emerging anymore. It's now emerged. It is now a technology that's in play. And some people would say, well, that's cloud. And I beg to differ on that, too. I don't think it quite has quite the adoption rate that everybody thinks it does. But I digress. So with this adoption rate that we see happening, there are also people out there who Bitcoin's not quite household yet. Right? It's close. It's very, very close. And it's hard for us to realize that as cybersecurity practitioners, as people in the IT field, that, you know what? Yeah, we see it every day, right? It's like, oh, Bitcoin, you know, we all talk about it at work and we're like, hey, like, what? How, should we buy? You know, should we not? At least we did back in 2014. Frank and I talked about buying and we didn't. Otherwise, we would be having this conversation from our yachts.
Stop flaunting our failures.
I have to, because I need you guys to understand, I need everybody out there to understand, all of our listeners to understand, do not buy things based off of what Frank and Dustin say. No. Yeah, so you do see this high societal adoption rate, and you see it being utilized for different things. People are, you know, again, for the NFT stuff, for Mark Cuban is now taking Dogecoin, or Spurs pair.
Mavericks, right. Yeah.
Wait, was I right? Or who knows? But either way, so you have these like these really cool implementations happening of this technology, and all within that, all these implementations that you have, that just makes the use case for this technology grow and grow and grow. Now, at the same time, like Frank mentioned, it's scary because this is, we can say it's relatively untested. It's been around for better part of a decade now, right? Or almost over a decade now. So if you want to talk about testing, sure, there have been breaches, there have been issues, there have been double spend issues, there have been wallet break-ins. Obviously, people do use them sometimes for nefarious purposes, such as buying things on the dark web, such as payments for ransomware. A lot of ransomware will use Bitcoin or equivalent altcoin in order to receive payments from people who need the crypto key to unlock all their files after a piece of malware locks all of them, or a piece of ransomware locks all of them for pseudo anonymity. I'd love to see if somebody's done this study. I haven't looked into it to see what percentage of people use crypto for nefarious purposes versus what percentage of people use fiat currency for nefarious purposes. I'm pretty sure that I think fiat still wins in that. I think just, you know, there's going to be crime, or at least the foreseeable future, unfortunately. So, you know, they've got to get paid. So that's kind of how that's going to work. Some of the more amazing things that we've seen is the way that altcoins are kind of coming into play now too. So Bitcoin, obviously, everybody says it's the gold standard. However, it's finite. There's going to be a time where there will be no more Bitcoin. And then, you know, there's going to be an issue with that, right? There are hard and soft forks that blockchains can go through in order to change something on the chain or upgrade the chain, if you will. And that's kind of one way around the Bitcoin finality that we kind of see approaching quicker than I think anybody thought, even Satoshi Nakamoto, right? We see these altcoins attempting to solve the issues that were originally with Bitcoin. One of the biggest ones is Ethereum. Ethereum is not only attempts to solve that issue, but it also introduced smart contracts, which were this revolutionary idea where you could write this code so that when you spend a certain amount of cryptocurrency, it would execute this code. So think of that in terms of escrow accounts or something like that, where Dustin Brewer wants to buy something from Frank Downs online. Dustin Brewer puts Ethereum he wants to pay Frank Downs for in an escrow account. It goes through the smart contract process. And then once Dustin Brewer receives the actual product, UPS can report that Dustin received the actual product. Then Frank actually gets the money out of the escrow account. So a lot of really cool legal things that are going on with that. Obviously, it's all still very new. We're all still very scared to jump into this and accept it as something more so than a valid third party or a clearinghouse or any of those other kind of financial institutions that we've been so used to for so long. And of course, there is always the issue of getting rid of a centralized banking system, which now we actually see centralized banking systems starting to embrace this, right? We see, again, the Chinese government created their own cryptocurrency. We see places like Goldman Sachs that are starting to get into cryptocurrency. You know, the U.S. Fed is a little bit behind the ball on this. I hope they kind of come to terms with whatever it is they need to come to terms with. It appears to be somewhat, at least in its current form, somewhat of the future of currency and of financial everything, right? Auditing and record keeping and all these other things that, you know, we've been doing, I don't want to say archaically, because we've been using computers to do these things for a long time, but almost this next evolution of it. And again, I'd almost throw it out there. I'm going to go ahead and do a futurist thing here.
Do it.
Even if tomorrow the Bitcoin blockchain is hacked and billions of dollars are stolen, after the dust settles, something else will take its place.
Go to another one. They'll be like, right. Oh, yeah, now it's ETH.
Right, now it's Ethereum, right? Or even, let's say, cryptocurrency in general. Like, let's say somebody cracks the quantum issue tomorrow, and all of a sudden we have widespread quantum computing, right? So that therefore the blockchain is null and void, right? Because all of our current encryption standards are going to be basically wiped off if that happens. There will be a quantum crypto that comes out or something along the lines, because the idea has now been planted in people's heads that there is a way to do this decentralized, and that solves a lot of issues monetarily, process-wise, business-wise, and so on.
This episode of the Isaka podcast is brought to you by ESET, the global leaders in cybersecurity. ESET business solutions range from endpoint and mobile security to encryption, two-factor authentication, and advanced threat detection. And they've just introduced their new endpoint security management platform called ESET Protect. The ESET Protect business security bundles take security to a whole new level. For small businesses and MSPs, I recommend ESET Protect Advanced to cover all your security bases. ESET Protect Advanced includes endpoint protection, cloud sandboxing for advanced threat detection and prevention, full disk encryption, file server security, and cloud-based console. Right now, you can save 20% with this limited time offer. So you're not only getting best-in-class cloud-managed protection against advanced attacks, you're enjoying a significant discount. Not yet convinced? Don't worry, you can also get a free trial and an interactive demo at business.eset.com/isaka. Get 20% off ESET's new business cybersecurity bundle, ESET Protect Advanced, at business.eset.com/isaka.
Frank, any thoughts on my crazy?
I think you're right there, and I think it's kind of inevitable at this point. When the example I always like to use is the IRS makes me declare it, right? How long it'll take before it becomes the new currency of Earth or something like that, I think, you know, that's a while out. But I still think in a world where you don't have a gold standard requirement anymore, why not, right?
Or as Elon Musk put it, I think he said it's going to be the currency of Mars, right?
Yes.
I think he said
it. Yeah, exactly. And it's a good point there.
Yeah, it's a good point, because when Mars has a currency system. Yeah. And another thing to note here is that I think you and I are kind of making a time capsule here, right? I think you and I really want to put some things down on digital paper here to say what we want to say about it. And so 10 years from now, when we look back on it and, you know, we've invested however many thousands of dollars in crypto and it's all gone to zero, we can say, wow, this podcast really aged like milk.
Yeah. It's so right now.
So again, and I just wrote an article on this that's going to be out in the Isaka Journal. My gosh, I can't remember which one it's going to be out in. But, you know, basically talking about how cryptocurrency has been a really great case study as far as emerging technologies go, because it's happened so quickly, right? It's the adoption has happened so quickly. The improvements upon it have happened so quickly. There have been offshoots of it, forks, as they call them, in the crypto industry. There's been all these new versions. There's been business. There's been all within 10 years, right? This has been just a wild, wild ride where something went from a fraction of a cent being worth one fraction of 1 cent, and not just something, bits and bytes, ones and zeros, went from being worth a fraction of a cent to being worth $50,000 per coin with Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. That is, I'm not good at math. I can't tell you what the percentages that it has gone up are. That's a massive percentage increase. One of the things I said was, I think if you invested $100 into Bitcoin in 2010, it would be worth $50 million now. And that is a really, really hard number to ignore for anybody. And again, I'm not telling anybody to go out and invest in it now. It might have reached its peak. I don't know. I don't think so, but I'm not telling anybody to invest in it now. I'm just saying that when it comes to thinking about emerging technologies, when it comes to thinking about the future, it's really, really hard to ignore something that has had that much adoption and it has been this much of a disruptor.
It's just an extension of what we've used, right? In the past, there were scripts for companies that had coal mines and so forth. Now there's the dollars and so forth. So why wouldn't it be these very accurate? When you talk about the blockchains affiliated with them, when you look at the falsifying rate and so forth, it's like 0.1%, whereas the average false transaction rate for the financial world per year is like closer to like 6 to 8%.
I
saw it on CNBC. That's entirely my time.
So yeah, it's CNBC's fault if those numbers are not accurate.
Yeah, there we go. It only kind of makes sense that technology, as we progressed, we watched the exchange of value take all these different forms. Right, it only makes sense that this is one that's coming.
Absolutely.
Or it's here.
And I think the great thing about this for all of us, everybody listening, for Frank and myself, is that this is kind of job security, right?
If all totally.
If all money is all of a sudden now ones and zeros and our jobs to audit and to secure ones and zeros, I think we're set, everybody. I think we're good.
Yeah, it's good. Tell all your friends. Tell all the younger generation, too, so they can really get an understanding. That's consistently the hardest thing to do for both, not for IT in general, but also for IT audit and cybersecurity is getting people in early. So,
yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
That's a whole other podcast right there.
It really is. I did actually jump into some Solidity programming, which is basically the way that you program smart contracts. And, you know, as far as programming languages go, it's very, I'd say, human friendly. Like it makes sense when you write it. It looks like you're speaking to someone, or like maybe even like pseudocode, if you will. These newer technologies that are coming out are actually the ability for people to learn them, obviously, is going up, because if you make it that easy for humans to read, then you don't just need to be a geek or a nerd like myself. You can be anybody who might not want to learn a brand new language, but can, you know, at least get through something like Solidity. Now, with all that being said, there are job opportunities out there as well for smart contract writers, smart contract engineers, smart contract auditors. Like there's all these really cool job opportunities that are now springing out of the cryptocurrency market. And again, it's kind of like investing, right? I don't want to tell anybody what to do here, but it is an interesting, you can jump on, I think there's an online IDE where you can actually jump on and do some Solidity programming and actually run a script or run a smart contract on a test environment before you ever have to actually spend any Ethereum to do. Yeah, it's a really, really interesting world, and it's great times we're living in, to be honest with you.
It is.
And I'm not just saying that because cryptocurrency is up. Do you have any questions, Abby, on crypto?
You've given a few disclaimers that you're not going to necessarily lead anyone to like financial success.
Or else we would have led ourselves there.
I was going to say, do you think that knowing kind of the knowledge and the history and your predictions for the future, do you think that is helpful to someone that is looking to kind of make it rich here? Or do you think it's about finding a viral Reddit thread and just striking it rich that way?
Okay. Yeah. No, that's a good question. I think there are dangers and risks with ignoring emerging technologies just as much as there are in investing in them. So in other words, yes, having the knowledge of how cryptocurrency works, it definitely has aided me in financially, I guess I should say, right? I actually mined some Dogecoin back in the day. And if you don't know what Dogecoin is, it's an altcoin, which for some reason has just gone bonkers recently. And the only reason why I had those is because I mined them, which is a process in which you like get a computer system together, you run a specific software algorithm on it, and then you connect to a pool, and there's this big process involved with it. And I don't think that Frank or I could have done that without, you know, having some kind of computer knowledge. And now that being said, you don't really need that anymore. You can go on any kind of DeFi or a decentralized finance exchange, and you can buy anything you want nowadays. You can buy Bitcoin, you can buy Ethereum, you can buy Dogecoin, you can buy Ripple. Well, Ripple is kind of up in the air right now. But
maybe don't buy that. Don't buy that right now.
There's a bunch of different things you can buy. It always surprises me when people still don't know what cryptocurrency is. So like if you say, you know, hey, like Bitcoin, they'll be like, Bitcoin, what's that? And you try to explain it to them, and it's just like, it's like speaking another language, right? And it's like, wait, what people are paying money for this? And it's like, well, yeah.
Yep.
But you know, we're kind of going into this world where we're all paying for non-tangible things already. Like we're paying for bandwidth right now, which is crazy, and it's actually being put on kind of a sliding scale depending on who you get your internet service provider is. So you're literally paying for the capability to send ones and zeros, right? And then there are certain companies like Isaka, we produce content, right? Most of that content is in digital form. You can buy, of course, you know, our books. We have books in a bookstore, and you can buy, you know, printed copies of most of our content, but some things you can't. In other words, we are literally selling you ones and zeros. Again, there's more to it than that. We've, you know, these are all peer-reviewed, great pieces of work from our content team. I'm not trying to put them down by saying that they're only ones and zeros, but let's say the zombie apocalypse happens tomorrow and all of a sudden computers don't work. What do you have to show for the money that you spent? I guess you have your knowledge, right? You have your knowledge, and that's kind of it. And no, I don't think that a zombie apocalypse is actually going to happen anytime soon. I do use that as kind of a way to think about whenever I run into somebody who is not very savvy with cryptocurrency or with any kind of emerging technology, you know, I try to remind myself that I'm inundated with it day to day. And it's really hard to kind of back up from that and say, not everybody is, you know, people go to the store and they pay with cash, and they, you know, the other day I got really mad when I couldn't pay with my credit card, you know, and I was like, what? Like, they're like, oh, our credit card machine's in. I was like, well, I don't have any cash, you know, like quintessential millennial over here. Sorry, but I don't carry cash with me.
Thanks, Dustin. Thank you, Frank. And thank you to our sponsor, ESET. That's all the time we have on this episode of the Isaka Podcast, but to make sure you never miss an episode, be sure to subscribe to the Isaka Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.